You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Monday, August 23rd. It's also a great pleasure to be joined today by Josh Hanford, who is the Commissioner for Housing and Community Development, and that's a department of the Agency of Commerce and Community Development. Mr. Hanford, very pleased to have you with us today. Thank you very much for making the time for this conversation.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Happy to talk about housing. It's a pretty important issue right now.
It certainly is. As you well know, housing has been a topic of discussion and conversation for quite a few years, actually, in Vermont, not just an outgrowth of the COVID-19 pandemic, although that certainly has shined a spotlight on that situation, too, and I'm sure we can discuss that as we go forward. But I guess just to kind of get us started here, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about why it is you think that there is such an apparent shortage of affordable and workforce housing in the state. It would seem like the market is screaming at maximum volume for saying there is a demand for this, and yet developers or contractors, folks in the construction industry, just seem to have had a hard time responding to that. I wonder if you could sort of break it down for us and tell us how we got to here.
Sure, absolutely. The sort of housing shortage in Vermont has been a long time in the making. I think the pandemic has really put a spotlight on it, certainly exacerbated the housing challenges we have. We've seen how important having a safe place to call home is when we're trying to all stay home and stay safe. Really, we have to go back a few decades and look at what our housing starts have been, how much we've been building, what our supply is compared to our demand. And if you look at our statistics, our data from the Census Bureau about residential construction starts, you really have to go back to the 1980s when you saw more units being built than the peer demand at any given point. We really were producing more units back then that was being absorbed every single year. Since then, in the 90s and the 2000s, we've barely been building enough units compared to what's lost each year for just natural reasons, you know, whether it's conversion away from housing or it's fire or just disrepair. And so we're sort of at a standstill here. We're building new units across the state, but it's not really keeping up with the demand because we have a number of housing units going offline each year. And so it's kind of hard to address our housing challenges when we're not building enough units naturally. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, some is the price points, the cost of material, the labor. Some of our land use laws and goals have sort of stifled development somewhat. I will say that just the 2020 data came out, and last year residential home building starts was back up 50%. So clearly folks are seeing the demand for housing since COVID started, and we're seeing more housing starts than in the previous two decades automatically in this first year. So that's a rare good thing to share on the housing front. I hope it continues, and I hope it's a sign of more to come.
As I've been talking to folks in the industry, it sounds like there are three things that kind of consistently get raised when it comes to the question of why isn't there more housing being developed, although it sounds like from what you're just saying that you know, things are beginning to swing around. And of course, a big driver of that may be the $150 million in ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act, federal funds that the state will be deploying. But it seems like labor, cost of land, cost of materials all seem to be factors that make penciling out, as this expression goes in the trade, a project to build, a cluster of workforce housing just isn't profitable.
Absolutely. You know, it's labor, it's lumber, which represents all sort of building material. Both of those are up and they're scarce. It's also land use. You know, we have a lot of, more complicated land use, zoning, permitting regime than we did 20, 30 years ago. Lots of it for very good policy reasons, but it adds cost to the development of housing. Some national statistics show that about 25% of a new home, the cost of to build a new home is related to land use, permits, regulations, and so forth. And so as we become more sophisticated, put more of these good policies in place, they do have a tendency to raise the cost of building a home. That gets passed on to the buyer. You know, if wages aren't going up commensurate with that, it just makes it more affordable. I mean, more unaffordable for folks. Another piece here is that we have a lot of folks sort of in this middle income that need housing built, but most of our policies to build more housing don't really touch that sort of market rate housing production. We have a lot of funding and programs to sort of help build more affordable housing, particularly apartments, which is great. We need those. And then folks at the upper end, you know, they'll find someone to build them a nice home. They'll buy enough property to put in, say, a private septic or well, if that's the situation they have. But there really isn't large government programs to really incentivize the building of these modest income homeownership units. And it was a fact that it was just more affordable years ago. We built more of these smaller starter homes, ranch homes. You see whole neighborhoods like that. And we just haven't had state or federal programs to really incentivize that. I think the time is coming because this has become such a crisis. Some of the new federal infrastructure, human infrastructure bills you hear being talked about have some incentives in there for home production, just for this sort of first-time home buyer segment of the population, because they could be priced out of home ownership. And if people are staying in apartments longer, it really is also impacting lower-income folks. They're competing with them for rents, and that's just never going to work out for folks that really, you know, don't have a chance to raise their incomes.
How would the incentives work for the contractors or developers who'd be putting up these homes or apartments? Would this be like in the form of like a tax credit of some sort, or like a direct subsidy, I guess, for lack of a better term, to help them offset their costs? How would they typically take place?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that this can work. One of the discussions at the federal level is a sort of home ownership tax credit for building modest priced homes. I think one of the things that the governor's talked about, I've talked about, is sort of a home builder program in Vermont. If we could subsidize the production of this sort of missing middle home building and sort of provide a subsidy to those homes, whether it's $50,000 to the home builder to bring it online at a price point that's more affordable for working families. And that could be used to help, you know, purchase the land. It could be used to help with the permits and engineering. It could be used with materials. It really could be put to use in a variety of ways. You know, there could be a land banking, for example, where if we know we have good developable land that meets smart growth principles, like could communities with the support from the state offer that land, you know, for sale or for gift for specific purpose of building this sort of affordable home ownership, so it brings the cost down. It could be to help with the infrastructure, because often those costs are passed on to the family that purchases the home. If you have to put in a sewer or water extension, roads, those all get added into the development price. And if communities, the state, can help pay for those up front, the homes will be brought, you know, to the market at a more affordable. So those are all ideas we're talking about. I'm hopeful we will get, you know, more support with the legislature on some of these, and some of the federal funds will find flexibility there to do this same effort.
So looking at that $150 million or so that's in the state budget, I believe, coming from the ARPA money to be spent specifically for building more new housing, I guess I'm just curious, how will that program work? Is it going to be a case where local Municipalities will have to apply for money, or is it going to be divided by some sort of formula, like so it's spread around the state evenly, or is it going to be sort of proportional to a county's population, for instance? Is there some kind of guideline as to how that money will be distributed?
Yeah, well, it's sort of been divided up amongst a few different entities and organizations. For example, DHED has a small pot. It's only about $5 million to sort of assist smaller mom-and-pop property owners that may want to add an apartment or maybe have an apartment that's offline because it has code deficiencies. It's got some life safety issues. So, you know, we're going to work through a whole regional group of homeownership centers, nonprofit housing providers, and experts to deliver these grants up to $30,000 to help these property owners bring these apartments online, make them available in existing housing stock, because that's part of our challenge in Vermont. Not all communities are the same. We have some existing housing stock that can help meet our housing shortage in some communities. You know, I know for a fact that with this program, we've done some pilots of it in Bennington. It's a great location. There are some older housing stock there that's offline that could be great apartments for folks. But the sort of owners are upside down in the amount of effort that it needs and cost to bring those units up to modern standards, code, energy efficiency, and still be able to rent them at affordable rates. So with a grant or a low interest loan, We can work with those owners to bring those apartments online. Most of the money that's going out as grants will be distributed by the Vermont Housing Conservation Board, VHCB. The legislature sort of directed the lion's share of money to them. And we have to remember a big focus of this ARPA money is to rehouse folks that are experiencing homelessness. We moved a lot of folks into hotels and motels at one point. 2,400 households in Vermont. Those numbers are down, but we still have a lot of people that are living in temporary housing. And a lot of this money is directed to rapidly create affordable housing to access people out of homelessness. And so those projects are being submitted as we speak. Already about $50 million of the $155 million has been awarded to projects. So housing developers, nonprofit housing groups, you know, they have to bring the projects to the board. It's available statewide. You know, a needs assessment on each project is done to see if, you know, there is a need for those units in those communities. Some of the more rapid projects are sort of converting existing properties into efficient rental apartments, one bedroom, two bedroom. You have some offline hotels and motels, as a matter of fact, that are being converted into apartments, you know, full-time permanent apartments. That can happen fairly rapidly. Some projects are building brand new housing from the ground up. You know, it's a vacant lot. It's it meet all the needs of the community. And those projects take a little bit more time. And I think this next legislative session, we'll see more money allocated to housing, to building more housing. There's more ARPA money left. There's still another almost $500 million that the legislature still has to appropriate with the governor. And I know housing will be on the governor will be supporting building more housing with some of those funds. And our hope is we get a little bit more flexibility from the Treasury to use some of this money for this missing middle, to build some homeownership units. That's what's really missing. We haven't been given authority to really use those special funds for middle-income homeownership building yet, and the market is just not reacting on its own that we feel to really meet this need. So we've got to do something to sort of prime the pumps here.
What about downtown zoning rules? I know that's been another aspect of this conversation for a while. Some municipalities, and I know right here in Manchester over the past couple of years, the local planning commission and zoning boards have done an extensive reevaluation of zoning regulations to allow for more dense home ownership in downtown cores to the towns. Is that a critical component of this whole equation too, do you believe?
Absolutely. You know, to spend this money efficiently, to get the most units, we have to sort of change some of the underlying land use sort of regulations that are in place. And A lot of communities adopted zoning standards from the 70s, and they really haven't been updated. They were sort of a different era. You were really looking to house people away from where they worked. You know, they worked, they drove into work to these places, you know, as factories or whatever, office buildings, and no one thought about building housing right next to that. Oh, they want to get away from work. And a lot has changed over the last 40 years. You know, people are looking for smaller units. They're looking for walkable communities. They don't want to all have to have two cars in every family. And some of the zoning needs to consider that. It needs to allow for mixed use, housing right next to retail, right next to the coffee shop. This is what the new folks are demanding, not only sort of millennials that have tendency to enter home ownership later. They want to be in apartments where they can walk to work and enjoy rest. And also downsizing, seniors are not looking to have that huge home out in the country that they have to maintain and you know, scrape the paint every year. So the housing demands are shifting. And so allowing our communities to build more housing in these small infill density, think, you know, a multiple stories is part of the solution. We have to get the sort of foundation right to make that more of an opportunity in more of our communities. And a lot of communities are looking at this right now. We have a program called Zoning for Great Neighborhoods. We had some national consultants contracted to come in Vermont, work with 7 pilot communities to look at what their existing zoning was and help them adapt it for this sort of new housing needs that we're seeing and make their community, you know, pro housing growth in smart growth locations. And we're using those templates, those pilot communities to help other communities look at what they can do to change and adapt in these ways. And it's part of our future. You know, some of these retail spaces, think some old churches that no longer have the congregation, schools that have sort of community, smaller schools that have shut down. Those are all great places for people to live, be right in the heart of their community, great adaptive reuse. But we have to change our zoning to allow for that, consider the impacts of people living in those areas. So that's a big part of the solution here.
What part of Act 250, when it comes to housing, should be updated from as it was written back in 1970?
Absolutely. I think that there's a lot of folks that support what I'm going to talk about, but it just hasn't been able to make its way through the legislature for a variety of reasons. But Act 250, when it comes to housing, is triggered when you proposed 8 or more units of housing. Whether they're scattered site, they're different properties, or it's one development above 8 units, Act 250 has jurisdiction. And so that can present a barrier just on and of itself. You know, there's an application fee. It's quite expensive. It gives a chance for, you know, abutting and neighbors and other folks to appeal those properties. We've seen many housing properties that most people in the communities welcome stopped because of Act 250. You know, folks that objected to it, NIMBY, they just didn't want, you know, an apartment complex near them. For whatever reason, it can be appealed for character, change of character, the neighborhood, traffic, so on and so forth. And one of the strategies, one of the things the governor's been proposing for a few years now, and it seems to have a lot of support, is to exempt Act 250 in our designated areas. You know, we have designated downtowns. There's 23 of them in the state. They have, you know, their own, you know, permitting regime. They have sewer water allocation. They manage their communities. And in those places, a new housing development should be their decision. It doesn't need an Act 250 permit. It can often stop those developments. So we really want to get Act 250 exemption in these designated areas. And we think that's going to break down some of the barriers for more housing development in these smart growth locations. Frankly, take pressure off of building new developments out in the hillside, out in the ag land, you know, up on our, you know, ridgelines. That's the goal of Act 250, right, is to protect our view sheds and our natural environment. So why should we not want more density in already built environments? Most people agree with that. I think the politics comes in here is They're looking at that as a part of the bigger Act 250 reform. They don't want to make that change unless other parts of Act 250 are also updated, you know, maybe to include climate change aspects or more forest fragmentation protection. And so this piece that seems to be universally supported has not gone for 3 years in a row because the larger Act 250 reform is just too hard to get done. I think it's really unfortunate because we've probably stopped some housing development that is in the exact place we want it, smart growth, and we have a housing crisis. So I really hope we can, not let perfect get in the way of the good here when we have a housing crisis and, you know, people literally homeless in Vermont because we're not building enough homes.
Mm. I was just wondering, as you were talking, I began thinking about another aspect of this, and that's, you know, the whole climate change aspect of this. Is this an opportunity as new homes and new housing projects are hopefully constructed to sort of require that houses either be as energy efficient as possible, maybe even have solar panels on their roofs, or is that just trying to kind of, as you say, making the perfect be the enemy of the good, and just kind of load up a project with too many other requirements that makes somebody think, no. But or could we say, hey, you know, we really need to have homes built that are as energy efficient as we possibly can make them, and that's the way it's got to be done.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of shared goals there. You know, I think the devil's in the details. We're driving up the cost of rent or home ownership for those least able to afford. It's kind of, you know, if we made it too perfect and it's too expensive. I know that the Climate Council is talking about this now. They're looking about recommendations for fuel switching and fuel pricing to really bring the least carbon polluting sort of technologies into home building and retrofitting. And, you know, I think most people support that. I'm just worried. I don't want to drive the cost of housing up even more for those that are least able to afford the housing. It's quite a big, if they're having to pay $20, $30 more a month to meet these goals, that could be an impact for someone. And we have to really look, I think, realistically on, you know, how much energy are they using? How much contributors to the carbon problem is a small household that's low income having, as opposed to very large homes, other producers? And I don't want to, throw the baby out with the bathwater, whatever the expression is. I don't want to have this common goal really exacerbate our housing unaffordability farther than it is. I mean, Vermont is ranked pretty high when it comes to cost of living, housing wages needed already. The bigger challenge here is it's fairly expensive standard of living, you know, in Vermont when you add in, our electricity, heat, property taxes, you know, all of that compared to the wages. And we just need to be careful about getting this the right balance here. I think everyone's in favor of, you know, weatherization, butting up of these homes, having better heating sources, heat pumps, reducing our carbon. But we just want to be careful about how that impacts those of us that are least able to afford a decent roof over our head, and not making it even more of a challenge for folks just to get by. And so, you know, that's something that the governor certainly is sensitive to and wants, you know, me and my team to try to find the right balance there. And there's going to be a lot of work on this issue over the next few years with recommendations coming out of the Climate Council.
I'm sure there will be. I guess I just was thinking also, as we said towards the beginning, this past year and a half or so, I've seen a rather, you know, sizable influx of new residents to Vermont, folks coming here, certainly buying a property, buying homes. I know down here in this area, every real estate agent I talk to has no inventory whatsoever. It seems like, anyway. I guess there's always one or two, but they would love to have a lot more inventory to sell, or at least show to prospective buyers than they do. What is your sense as to what the last 18 months or so with the COVID emergency How has that sort of influenced this whole housing question? I mean, as we said earlier, it was already a problem, or at least an area that folks were concerned about, but there's been so much attention paid to it, you know, as we look at folks coming from out of state and buying homes here. And I guess that's great. The state needs more residents, and it's good to have these folks here, and I'm able to work remotely or whatever. But how has that played in terms of the housing market overall?
Yeah, it really is sort of a double-edged sword here. You know, we need more people. Many folks have, you know, higher wealth. That's great for our tax base. You know, when they purchase these homes, that property transfer tax goes into a fund that helps support more housing. That part is great. You know, what is challenging is we don't, our inventory of homes for sale is down to next to nothing at this point. And we're not seeing enough new homes be sold and brought to the market. I think another piece here is the natural sort of, you know, people moving, finding a new home was slowed down during COVID. So, you know, those that had a home that they didn't live in that were able to sell, those were all, you know, purchased, but folks weren't able to move out of their home into a new home. It slowed everything up. It sort of gummed up the whole works, and it's going to take us a while to sort of get back to some of the normal patterns of people moving around and finding new housing options. And hopefully we have more supply coming. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but we have seen an uptick in the residential building permits in Vermont last year compared to the previous year. That's good news. I think we need a lot more of that. And, you know, it remains to be seen if this trend is going to continue long term. I think we saw a little bit this after 9/11, you know, a lot of folks moving into Vermont, purchasing homes, higher incomes, sort of out competing local residents. And then it faded off. Is this going to be long term because of remote work and people being able to work everywhere? We have to really, you know, wrestle with this, pay attention to the data. And I think it's even more reason why we need to incentivize as a state and local communities and, you know, everyone, sort of these more modest homes being built using existing properties, sort of smart growth locations. And we also need to sort of incentivize more people into the trades. Part of the problem right now is we have a lack of construction workers. You know, we need less stringent zoning rules to allow more creative housing to be built. We need better funding to recruit and train sort of construction workers. And we need pro-housing policies really to prevent a whole bunch of sort of working Vermonters thinking that they may never be able to own a home in Vermont. You know, if that is what people are left with years to come, they will vote with their feet and go to another state where they feel the income they earn will afford them, you know, the dream of home ownership. And I don't think we want a Vermont that goes in that direction. We want to be able to provide families that are working in Vermont with a place, you know, a home that they can afford and, you know, be full contributors to their community. And that's my goal, certainly, to provide and find more of those opportunities and work with anyone and everyone that wants to help address that problem.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, Commissioner Hanford. But I want to thank you very much for making the time for this conversation on this very important subject. I know it's top of mind for many folks. And we'll look forward to seeing you when you come down here in October for the housing conference that will be held in Arlington that our two state representatives, Kathleen James and Seth Bongartz, are organizing. I'm sure that will be a great opportunity to, you know, dig into all of these issues even more.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that. And thanks for, you know, bringing up the topic. It's important for us all to, you know, talk about, be more educated and do what we can do to support the housing needs of our neighbors. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Right. And thanks to all of you too for being with us today. Hope you found our program interesting and well, we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.